content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Hello and welcome to the November edition of Heard Any Good Books Lately, a program from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. This program is brought to you by the Friends of the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, an organization of citizens, volunteers, and patrons, all interested in supporting the library and the services it provides. The Friends Group was founded in 1989 and now has more than 300 members across North Carolina. If you would like to join the Friends Group yourself, we'll have information on how to do that later in the program. This program is all about books, with special emphasis on those available from the North Carolina Library for the Blind. The library has more than 86,000 titles in its collection. Books and magazines are available in large print, braille, and talking books as well, both digital and cassette. The library has more than 11,000 patrons across the state. If you're not a patron but are interested in becoming one, I'll have more information for you at the end of this program. This month, we will take a look at some of the most popular books checked out during the month of September 2014 at the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. We'll begin this program with a look at the book called Invisible by James Patterson and David Ellis. And this book was reviewed by John Wills. Invisible is a difficult book to read because of the sheer horror and mayhem, but it's even tougher to put down. James Patterson's books have sold more than 300 million copies. His stories are realistic and terrifying. His latest novel, Invisible, easily fits those two descriptors. David Ellis is a Chicago attorney and the author of 9 novels, including Line of Vision, for which he won the Edgar Award for the best first novel by an American author. Invisible's protagonist, FBI analyst Emmy Dockery, has a vexing problem. Her sister died in a fire that investigators insist was accidental. Emmy, however, sees that conclusion much differently and moves beyond her personal grief to develop evidence that proves not only her sister was murdered, but numerous other victims suffered an identical fate. Yet the biggest obstacle Emmy must overcome is convincing her boss of her hypothesis. FBI Executive Assistant Director Julius Dickinson is a man with whom Emmy has had previous disagreements. In fact, the acrimony between them is so intense that she refers to the man as the Dick. She ultimately prevails in her efforts and receives permission to launch an investigation into the arson murders, but only after she devises an elaborate scheme that puts her boss in an untenable position. Her former fiancé, Harrison Bookman, a.k.a. Books, used to be an FBI special agent, but now owns a bookstore. After Emily implores him to help find her sister's killer, he agrees to return to his old job to head up the complex investigation. Assisted by several other analysts, the team develops evidence that points to a diabolical scheme to torture and murder people. The twist is that even to the trained eye, the deaths appear to have been caused by accidental fires. The team dissects and analyzes every scrap of information about each of the dozens of heretofore accidental deaths, and finally discovers a method of operation allowing them to zero in on a suspect. Patterson and Ellis have created a unique antagonist, one they disguise so cleverly that readers will be shocked when they finally discover the monster's identity. The story is superbly written, particularly the treatment of the forensics. The evidence the FBI team must deal with is incredibly ghoulish. Nevertheless, the investigative techniques and legal protocol are spot on. Invisible is a difficult book to read because of the sheer horror, but it's even tougher to put down. Reading the story is almost like slowing down to look at a horrible traffic accident. You know you shouldn't, but you do it anyway. Invisible is a thriller that will keep you up at night. And that review was written by John M. Wills, who himself is a former Chicago police officer and a retired FBI agent. The next book we're going to take a look at is called The Witness, and it is by author Sandra Brown. through a mosaic of tantalizing clues, premonitions, and withheld identities. Brown has created another page-turner to ensure her phenomenal popularity. This story pivots on the relationship between Kendall Deaton Burnwood, an idealistic public defender, and U.S. Marshal John McGrath, who is returning her to Prosper, South Carolina, as a material witness when their car crashes into a ravine in Georgia. With her three-month-old in tow, Kendall tries repeatedly to abandon John, who's hobbled by temporary amnesia and a leg injury. Kendall fears the town of Prosper for good reason. It's where she witnessed her husband and father-in-law, ringleaders of a white supremacist vigilante group, ritualistically execute one of her clients. Evading Matt and Gib Burnwood, as well as the FBI, Kendall is also pursued across the South by the Crook Twins, vengeful brothers of a disgruntled client whose idea of a celebration is a drinking binge and the deflowering of a 12-year-old niece. The push-pull generated by John's memory loss and Kendall's terror sparks a sexual tension that is deftly and vividly consummated, and secrets keep popping out until the last page. Brown's forte is glitch-free, all over the map, plotting, and her take on white, trashy behavior pushes just the right buttons. Again, that book is called The Witness, and it was written by Sandra Brown. Now we're going to turn to another book called Switch by Grant McKenzie. How far will one man go to save the lives of the people he loves the most? It's an intriguing question, and one that so beautifully drives Switch by Grant McKenzie, who, by the way, is a Scottish-born writer currently living in British Columbia. Sam White is a struggling actor just trying to move beyond small roles like embarrassing TV commercials while he works as a security guard at a shopping mall. Well, one day he returns home from work to find his house blown up and two body bags being removed. Entirely devastated and assuming he has lost his wife and daughter, he receives an anonymous call from a kidnapper saying that they are indeed alive and will be kept alive so long as Sam completes a series of challenging and dangerous tasks. Soon after, Sam meets Zach Packer, a businessman who is also a victim of the kidnapper with a family member in jeopardy. The two bond together by the common goal of saving those they love the most are wonderfully brought together in circumstances where they're not entirely sure they can trust one another. And as they race through tasks and demands that become more violent and challenge their morals, they begin to slowly uncover a complex plot that uncovers links to their intertwined past. McKenzie has written a novel that races from beginning to end in a phenomenally quick manner. The writing is tight and doled out in extremely short chapter chunks. This double-impact delivery of the story moves things along at a breakneck speed and creates a thriller that is very hard to put down. Once again, the book is called Switch by Grant McKenzie. Now we're going to turn to another book by John Sanford. This one is called The Field of Prey. The night after the 4th of July, Layton Carlson Jr. of Red Wing, Minnesota, finally got lucky, and unlucky as well. He'd picked the perfect spot to lose his virginity to his girlfriend, an abandoned farmyard in the middle of cornfields, nice, private, and quiet. The only problem was that something smelled bad, like really bad. He mentioned it to a county deputy he knew, and when the cop took a look, he found a body stuffed down a cistern, and then another, and then another. By the time Lucas Davenport was called in, the police were up to 15 bodies and counting. And as if that wasn't bad enough, when Lucas began to investigate, he made some disturbing discoveries of his own. The victims had been killed over a great many years, one every summer, regular as clockwork. how could this have happened without anybody noticing? Because one thing was for sure, the killer had to live close by. He was probably even someone that they saw every day. Again, the book is called Field of Prey by John Sanford. The next book we're going to talk about today on this program is The Marriage Pact by Linda Lale Miller. The women of Bliss County are ready to meet the men of their dreams. See how it all begins in this enthralling new series by number one New York Times bestseller author Linda Lale Miller. The Marriage Pact is the first in the Brides of Bliss County series by Linda Lale Miller. She introduces us to three friends who form a pact to watch out for and aid each other in finding their one true love. The Marriage Pact introduces us to the folks of Bliss County. She shares a friends to lovers, little sister trope that will leave readers with a smile. Miller brings this small town to life from the local diner to ranch life. I can just see Hadley's quilt shop at the local feed store. Hadley Stevens almost made the biggest mistake of her life when Trip Galloway, her older brother's best friend, swooped in and stopped her. 10 years have gone by, and Hadley has grown up. Along with her friends, she is looking for Mr. Wright when Trip returns to town. In this tale, Hadley needs to address her own feelings towards Trip. She needs to overcome loss and address her fears. With the help of her friends, she just might find her happiness. I enjoy the dynamics of the three friends and their get-togethers. Their friendship and dreams felt genuine, says the writer. Trip left the big city to return to his roots, help his ailing father, and find peace. After a failed marriage that left him feeling scorned, he is not looking for a wife. Only problem is, when had Hadley grown into a woman? Trip is confident, smart, and a good son, but when it comes to interacting with Hadley, he is a tongue-tied teen again. I enjoyed watching them interact and giggle at his awkwardness. The Marriage Pact shares small-town dynamics, close-knit friends, and ranch life with a slow-building romance. The story delivered sweet tension as Miller moves us toward her end. I enjoyed the story, although Hadley and Tripp did not engage me as much as her previous characters, says the reviewer. I am curious about Hadley's friends, and Miller has hinted at things to come. The Marriage Pact was a solid read that entertained me. The next two books will feature her friends and more of Bliss County. Again, that's the first book in a new series by Linda Lale Miller. It's called The Marriage Pact. The next book we're going to take a look at on the program today is called Blue Flame by Jill Chalvis and Laura Heisler. Callie Hayes is the hardworking manager of the Blue Flame, Arizona's most remote, relaxing guest ranch. She's given everything to the ranch, body, heart, and soul, three things that go haywire when her sexy employer suddenly shows up. Their intense, stormy past has taught Callie to never mix business with pleasure. But something about Jake is different now. San Diego firefighter Jake Rawlings knows the ranch he inherited from his father is safe in Callie's capable hands. After being injured in a high-profile rescue, Jake decides to recover in solitude at the Blue Flame. He may have left the fires behind, but he hasn't escaped the heat. Callie is just as hot and irresistible as he remembers. Now coming home doesn't seem like the best idea, as the sparks between Jake and Callie threaten to burn out of control. The book is called The Blue Flame by Jill Chalvis and Laura Heisler. Now we're going to talk about a book by just about everybody's favorite author these days, Lee Child. This one is called Personal. It is both difficult and easy to believe that Personal is the 19th book in Lee Child's Jack Reacher series. Reacher achieved iconic status at some point in the remote past, so much so that Child could probably write a new installment annually by rote. He instead continues to change things up, combining the very familiar aspects of Reacher's character with the unknown elements of his past and the unpredictability of his present. The result is a series that never disappoints and continues to exceed its own standards with each new volume. By the way, this review was written by Joe Hartlob in September of 2014. Personal is told from Reacher's viewpoint in the first person, which, at least to my memory, is rare for this series. The story begins with Reacher in Seattle, a stopping point between A and the eternal point B. He is contacted by his old boss and whisked across the country for a briefing that touches upon his past. It seems that the president of France recently had been making a speech when a sniper took a long-range shot at him. The only thing saving his life was a new type of security glass that stopped the high-powered bullet. The powers that be quickly establish that there are only four people in the world capable of making such a shot. One of them, it develops, has a history with Reacher. When Reacher was an MP, he investigated the murder of a sergeant outside of a bar. He was able to identify the murderer, an expert sniper named John Cott, with more loose screws than Home Depot. Cott was tried and convicted of murder and sentenced to 15 years in prison. He was released a year early and had been living his life quietly in rural Arkansas when he suddenly dropped off the radar. The government believes that he may be setting up for an even bigger target at the G8 summit to be held in London. Reacher, as part of his due diligence, goes to the man's last known address and finds evidence that Cott has been practicing his shooting skills and has not forgotten Reacher, not for a moment. From there, Reacher spends almost the entirety of the remainder of the book as a world beater, which constitutes another change of pace for this series. He and a rookie CIA analyst, the wonderfully named Casey Nice, travel first to Paris to investigate the initial attempt and then to London, where a combination of world politics and the local underworld makes Reacher's job, preventing the assassination of one or more prominent government leaders by a master sharpshooter, an almost impossible task. The major strength of Personal is the mystery at the heart of the story, which is both explicit and implicit. The explicit portion deals with the issue of where the sniper will be shooting from and his whereabouts up until the time he attempts to carry out his mission. The implicit part is less tangible, though. Something about the entire scenario is bothering Reacher. It takes him a while to get it, but that isn't the point. He discerns that there are a number of seemingly unrelated points of information that don't make sense within the overall picture. When he figures things out, the full nature and extent of what he discovers is still unreeling itself into the end of the book. And while Personal is complete in itself, it sets up a plot point to be resolved in the future, hopefully sooner rather than later. As one has come to expect from Child's past performances, his latest book almost always contains some of his best writing. And Personal is no exception. It includes, among other things, one of the best nicknames, one of the only nicknames, to have been bestowed on Reacher in recent memory. One that is immediately memorable and appropriate on a number of different levels. The reader is also given a travelogue of sorts of Paris and London, two cities with which Child is intimately acquainted, and of which he is obviously fond. Best of all, it contains a few more breadcrumbs, including a somewhat poignant one, that reveal the trail leading to Reacher's background, both recent and remote. The apple, indeed, does not fall far from the tree. If you've never had the pleasure of reading a Reacher novel, Personal is an excellent place to start, says reviewer Joe Hartlob on September 2nd, 2014. Now let's talk about a new book by Philip Friedman. This book is called Reasonable Doubt. Ex-federal prosecutor Michael Ryan has been estranged from his 27-year-old son Ned for 3 years when Ned is murdered. His daughter-in-law, wealthy socialite Jennifer Neeland Ryan, has been indicted for the crime. Ned was bludgeoned to death in the private room of a Soho art gallery. Jennifer insists she's innocent and begs her father-in-law to defend her. Ryan wants to believe she's guilty, to bury his grief for the son he hardly knew and get on with his life, but he can't turn her away. He agrees to take the case. Teetering on an emotional precipice himself, Michael Ryan dusts off his rusty legal skills in the most sensational New York murder trial in decades. And as his ambivalence about Jennifer intensifies, as the painful truth about his son's life begins to emerge, Ryan realizes that his own life is also on trial as a father, as a lawyer, and as a man. Again, the book is called Reasonable Doubt, and it's by author Philip Friedman. And you're listening to Heard Any Good Books Lately from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Thanks so much for joining me today. Now we're going to turn to one of my favorite authors here, mystery writers, that is, Mary Higgins Clark. This one is called I've Got You Under My Skin. When Laurie Moran's husband was brutally murdered, only 3-year-old Timmy saw the face of his father's killer. 5 years later, his piercing blue eyes still haunt Timmy's dreams. Laurie is haunted by more, the killer's threat to her son as he fled the scene. Tell your mother she's next. Then it's your turn. Now Laurie is dealing with murder again, this time as the producer of a true crime cold case television show. The series will launch with the 20-year-old unsolved murder of Betsy Powell. Betsy, a socialite, was found suffocated in her bed after a gala celebrating the graduation of her daughter and 3 friends. The sensational murder was news nationwide. Reopening the case in its lavish setting and with the cooperation of the surviving guests that night, Laurie is sure to have a hit on her hands. But when the estranged friends begin filming, it becomes clear each is hiding secrets, small and large, and a pair of blue eyes is watching events unfold, too. This is a good one by Mary Higgins Clark. It's called I've Got You Under My Skin. Our next book for today is called Don't Talk to Strangers, written by Amanda Kyle Williams. Hailed by the Atlanta Journal-Constitution as one of the most addictive new series heroines, Key Street is the brilliant, brash heart of a sizzling thriller full of fear and temptation, judgments and secrets, infidelity and murder. In the woods of Whisper, Georgia, 2 bodies are found, one recently dead, the other decayed from a decade of exposure to the elements. The sheriff is going to need help to track down an experienced predator, one who abducts girls and holds them for months before ending their lives. Enter ex-FBI profiler and private investigator Key Street. After a few weeks, Key is finally used to sharing her downtown Atlanta loft with her boyfriend, Lieutenant Aaron Rosser. Along with their pets, his dog, her cat, they seem almost like a family. But when Rosser plunks a few ice cubes in a tumbler and pours a whiskey, Key tenses. Her addiction recovery is tenuous at best. Though reluctant to head out into the country, Key agrees to assist Sheriff Ken Meltzer. Once in Whisper, where the locals have no love for outsiders, Key starts to piece together a psychological profile. The killer is someone who stalks and plans and waits. But why does the sociopath hold the victims for so long, and what horrible things must they endure? When a third girl goes missing, Key races against time to connect the scant bits of evidence. All the while, she cannot shake the chilling feeling something dark and disturbing lives in these woods. And it is watching her every single move. Again, the book is called Don't Talk to Strangers by Amanda Kyle Williams. And we have time for just one more, Demolition Angel by Robert Crais, C-R-A-I-S. On the heels of the breakthrough bestseller and critically acclaimed L.A. Requiem, Robert Crais returns to the City of Angels with the most ambitious novel of his career, a standalone thriller featuring a complex and original female protagonist. Carol Starkey is a survivor, an L.A. bomb squad veteran now doing time as a detective with LAPD's criminal conspiracy section. It has been 3 years since the detonation that killed her partner and lover, Sugar Boudreaux. Sugar saved Carol's life, but couldn't stop two bomb fragments that sliced through her protective Kevlar, leaving her permanently scarred. The emotional fallout from the trauma can only be tempered by a steady diet of Tagamet and gin. When a seemingly innocuous bomb call takes the life of another colleague, Carol embarks on an investigation of a series of explosions that reveal intentions far more disturbing than one-shot acts of anarchy. They are designed expressly to kill bomb technicians, and as the one tech who got away, Carol is in the fight for her life. Against the dazzling and lonely backdrop of contemporary Los Angeles, Crais has crafted the most unforgettable female lead character in a crime fiction and pitted her against a frighteningly brilliant killer for the modern age. Again, the book is called Demolition Angel by Robert Crais. And that's just about all that we have time for this month's edition of Heard Any Good Books Lately. I'm George Douglas. I certainly hope you enjoyed it. If you would like more information about how to become a patron of the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, simply Google or search for NC Library for the Blind or call toll-free 1-888-388-2460. Again, that's 1-888-388-2460. You can also use those same phone numbers and website to join the Friends of the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. It is that wonderful organization that sponsors this monthly feature on books. This program is intended for a print and visually handicapped audience. Heard Any Good Books Lately will be available right after the broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. So long until next time.